This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Monday afternoon, October 21st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hartz. The WNBA season has come to an end with an exciting overtime championship game. We'll recap what's been a transcendent year for the league in our next segment. But right now, reports on home sales are on the agenda for this week, along with the start of earnings season. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home is Tom Hudson, financial journalist based in Miami, Florida. Tom, thank you for joining us today. And one report already out today, the Index of Leading Economic Indicators for the month of September. And what did that tell us?
Well, I think it tells us kind of confirming what we already expect and what we have seen in some of these other economic reports lately, which is, first of all, the U.S. consumer is still, you know, holding up, is still pretty good. And despite how people may feel about the economy, if we're following their money, things are pretty strong. Now, that said, yeah, maybe growth overall may slow a little bit from this leading index here. But still, this is perhaps that soft landing that folks have been wondering about, curious about. Kind of, we're in the middle of it. This is kind of what it probably feels like, Rob.
And then we have two reads on home sales later this week, existing and new home sales. And yep, this is interesting insofar as there's some interest rate sensitivities, but we're in the early going since the Fed cut rates at the end of September. We have not seen mortgage rate relief, and that the bond market has picked up since then.
Yeah, we have not seen much mortgage relief at all for home buyers, despite the Federal Reserve's activity from a few weeks ago. The bond market instead has moved in the opposite direction. And of course, the mortgage market really follows the bond market. It's not following what's coming out of the Federal Open Market Committee necessarily. That said, existing home sales tomorrow, there's going to be a high impact, a high interest in that for a view of whether or not home buyers are buying up, or if home sellers are feeling a little bit more, shall I say, aggressive to cut prices. I mean, there really has been kind of a loggerhead here between buyers being resistant to pay up for the higher cost of borrowing and sellers not really interested in cutting their prices too much because they know demand remains high.
And is that going to change any time between now and, let's say, next spring?
No, it's not, because we are 10, 12 years into a trend where we just have not built enough housing in the United States. Immigration, population growth has continued, but our housing growth, the housing stock, has not kept pace with population because home builders and others were so reluctant to put shovels and backhoes in the ground after the housing collapse of 2006, 7, and 8.
And then on Friday, we get a report on durable goods sales. Once again, another interest rate sensitive sector. And what should we see later this week?
Interest rate sensitive and large order sensitive, right? Aircraft is a big piece of this durable goods, and that can really influence the overall number. And of course, the trouble at Boeing is pretty well covered, and that's going to have an influence over that top line number. I think the durable goods ex transportation is the figure you want to look at, because it's going to strip out cars and automobiles. But look at that confidence of consumers, not only in buying large ticketed items, but also the ability to get credit to buy you know, refrigerators and washers and dryers on credit, even if that credit is coming with a certain cost with an interest rate.
Tom Hudson, financial journalist based in Miami, thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, the WNBA celebrates its biggest season ever.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The WNBA has seen a fitting conclusion to its most watched season ever, an overtime championship game. Let's talk about the state of the league with Julia Poe, Bulls and Sky beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Julia, thank you for joining us today. And it was 3 years ago on a day just like today, a Sunday afternoon outside of Wintrust Arena when the Sky clinched their WNBA championship. And it was seen as a turning point for the perception of the Sky in Chicago, as all championships are. But now we have Caitlin Clark, and now we have Angel Reese. So what's the state of the WNBA after a superstar year?
Yeah, it feels like every single month, every single year is another one of those turning points that you're talking about. I mean, I think this is just kind of what you see from any league, from any team that is going through this level of exponential growth. It feels like every new milestone is just that next big thing. And I think, you know, even this final series, you could really feel that. It just feels like there's so much change happening around this league.
Now, all of the discussion around the WNBA this year, you know, usually starts with Caitlin Clark. But there were certainly more stars heading into the league this year. And you even had a marquee matchup in the women's college basketball final between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And all of that publicity, did that benefit the entire league, or was there very much a case of haves and have-nots?
No, definitely. I think we saw across the league, I mean, viewership has been going up for every single team in every single market across the country. We're seeing, you know, gate revenue, ticket sales, every single aspect of the kind of the capitalism side of the sport is going up. But then also just the conversations that are occurring around teams, you're just seeing a deeper level of buy-in behind the scenes in investment and from fans. And I think that that is something that really has lifted every market and also has kind of challenged teams, franchises to make sure that they can, you know, take advantage of this moment as much as possible.
We're talking about the state of the WNBA with Julia Poe, a Bulls and Sky beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Now, with this brighter light being shined on the league, you're also starting to see some questions that the uninitiated may have about the pay structure in the WNBA. And of course, my big one is if you're drafted out of college, there's no time off. Once you are done with your college basketball career, you are playing. And some said, you know, that was one of the reasons why Caitlin Clark finished so strong, was that Olympic break gave her the rest that a lot of other basketball players who were playing in the Olympics did not get, because essentially it was all gas, no breaks from March until October. With this greater level of scrutiny, will that change the way players are drafted, because that to give them more rest time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how these women do it. Like you said, they go right from the collegiate season into their professional season. Some of them had international duty at the Olympics, and then believe it or not, some of them are headed straight from those finals directly onto a plane in the next week or two to go overseas and play in Europe or play in China. So it's a breakneck pace. It's been like that for a while, but I think it definitely is feeling more and more ramped up, especially as the season gets longer with expansion. I don't think that that necessarily means that we'll see a change in the draft schedule. I mean, the collegiate schedule is going to remain what it is. Obviously, the dub season is not going to really shift where it is in the calendar, because it's meant to offset the NBA season. But I think it's just something that, you know, a lot of teams are going to have to keep in mind when they do draft these players, especially off a deep NCAA run, is that you have to make sure that you're easing them into the season. Or you see something like Clark, something like Reese, Cardoso, where they're just so tired when they come into the start of their rookie season. And then, boom, you're playing grown women instead of just, you know, collegiate women. And that's such a big hurdle to kind of get over in those early weeks.
We saw the charter flights this year. Is this going to create a virtuous cycle where there's just more money coming in the league now via a better negotiated TV deal? If you spend any time on social media, you can see individual players who are just rolling up endorsements here, there, and everywhere. With more money coming into the league, how does that transfer the league itself?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's another area where it kind of feels like positives all around. But like I said, the other side of the coin is that all of that success is a challenge for the league, for players, for franchises to figure out how to kind of take advantage of the moment and how to maximize their gains as much as possible. The big area for the players with that coming up will be the renegotiation of their CBA agreement. So that's going to be really critical as they're getting, you know, as you get TV lined up. Now it's like, okay, There's so many more gains coming into the league. How can the players make sure that they're still maximizing how much of that revenue they're seeing on their end?
Julia Poe, Bulls and Sky beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, young workers are having a tough time advancing their careers because a lot of people are deciding to stick around.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
What's being called the Great Stay is hindering the path of newer workers. Let's learn about what the phrase means and its impact from Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. The Great Stay follows the Great Resignation, where everybody found the new job and searched for greener pastures coming out of the depths of the COVID-19 pandemic. But now it sounds like those people who got new jobs a couple of years ago, they want to hold on to them for a while. And that's proving to be a source of frustration for people trying to move around in this job market.
Sure. But let's look at this. Remember when everybody left, many of the people who left were either by choice or actually chronologically aging out. A lot of the trades that went into retirement, people who said, well, this is very complicated, COVID's doing this, I'm going to stay home. My financial advisor says I can do that. So a lot of people just left the market and weren't going to come back. The other thing that we want to fold into this is, even with all of the constant turmoil and rhetoric around what's going on in the economy, you know, over 54% of the people in the workforce are relatively happy with their compensation, so why should they leave? Here's the last thing, though, that has been going on for the last 30 years. When there is uncertainty, it causes absolute paralysis, and we've never been in a more uncertain time than we are. Well, perhaps we have, but I can't think of one. Inflation's worldwide, but the U.S. is doing the best of the developed nations. Politicization is taking over the truth. People's personal experience is fact. It's gender. It's right to life. It's fault. And then we get on top of that. Is it work from home? Is it return to office? Is it hybrid? People are worn out. So the people that left. The people that didn't leave are okay. And they're not really going to do anything. This isn't the Great Stay. This is sort of the great crouch.
So if you're trying to break into this job market, if you're trying to either move jobs in search of better opportunities elsewhere, or you're trying to break into a particular field, what can you do to stand out where everybody's sitting?
Okay, sure. Well, that's another point to think. So let's take two parts of this. So if you have a job and you're happy with it, this is not the time to hide. You know, get under your desk. You make sure that you're clearly visible as someone who's making a contribution and is relevant to the business. Because when there's uncertainty, there's also contraction. If you're looking to get into the market or you're looking to get into a new role, you don't want to go where the competition is. You don't want to go into places that are by industry or by the specific company, very sort of conservative. They're a buy and hold sort of organization. They've always been ABC company. They always will be ABC company. You have to be looking for companies that are looking for growth, that are in growth sectors, and looking for ways that you can introduce yourself as someone who can help them continue to go in the ways that they're trying to go. Not the static part of the industry, but the growth part of the industry. And you're not going to do that through a resume. You're not going to do it through the public traded markets, because I can get 3,000 resumes tomorrow and not look at one of them. And none of those people are going to get a job. I can look at 3,000 resumes and hire one. That means 2,999 didn't get a job. It's still down to the go get in front of people and have conversations about what they do and how what you've already done would be useful to them. Not what you want, but what they want.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, taking the confusion out of splitting a restaurant check.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station. News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The city of Chicago is changing its housing policy for migrants. The White House is working to expand free accessibility of contraceptives. It can be awkward to split a restaurant check, but there are strategies to keep it simple. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get some suggestions from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed right now. The Dow down 304 points. The NASDAQ now up 2. The S&P 500 down 16. We have 74 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies, going up to a sunny 83 today. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. The city of Chicago scaling back its response to new arrivals. Mayor Johnson says beginning next year, the city will consolidate its new arrival shelter system and move towards one unified system.
Currently, we are seeing fewer and fewer asylum seekers arrive in the city of Chicago. So we are now able to shift from a large-scale crisis response to a more cost-effective, equitable, and strategic approach that addresses homelessness for all who need support.
That means adding 3,800 beds to the city's legacy homelessness service system and providing support for both new arrivals and Chicagoans experiencing homelessness. The transition also eliminates shelter stay limits. The White House is proposing a rule to make over-the-counter birth control more accessible. The details from CBS's Stacey Lynn.
Right now, health insurers cover the cost of prescribed contraception, but the new rule would expand on that, giving millions of people on private insurance plans access to condoms, birth control pills, or morning after pills without a prescription and for free.
The proposed rule is subject to a 60-day public comment period. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed slightly. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors, based in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And after a winning streak last week, it looks like the markets are taking a bit of a breather today.
Yeah, it's all about interest rates today. You've had both short and long-term rates go up dramatically, reflecting the fact that the economy is stronger than expected, that perhaps if the economy stays this strong and the Fed is cutting rates, you may get a reacceleration in the economy and a reacceleration in inflation in the middle of next year, combined with worries about the deficit, is putting pressure on interest rates, which is causing the market to rest a little bit after six straight weeks of gains.
And when it comes to interest rates, I think for a lot of people who are looking for maybe a little bit of relief in as far as the Fed was concerned when they cut rates by half a percentage point last month, there was this belief that maybe the era of higher interest rates really biting into your ability to borrow money was over. But the bond market had other plans. And what signal does that send?
Well, it signals that the Fed is probably going to have to be more gradual than the markets initially assumed. The futures markets have already taken out about 75 basis points worth of cuts over the next 12 months, which means that they're expecting almost 1% less cuts over the next 12 months, and that the battle against inflation is going to take a little bit longer, combined with a strong economy. And we're probably going to have a slower climb down in short rates and not much movement in long rates because of the problems with the deficit and the inherent strength in the economy. So that's not good for mortgages. It's not good for anything that's long-term financed. But short-term finance costs should continue to decline moderately.
And then we have, it's a big week for corporate earnings as earnings season continues. Big names, Tesla, Coca-Cola, GE Aerospace, all reporting this week. What has been the through line of earnings season so far, and what is expected out of some of these big names?
Yeah, so far so good. 79% of companies that have reported so far have beaten estimates. All the financial companies beat estimates. Taiwan Semi ratified the strength of the AI spend. So I think the expectations are very reasonable. And I think they're expecting that when it's all said and done, profits will have grown in excess of 5% this quarter and do even more in the fourth quarter, and hopefully further progress next year.
And then very quickly, when it comes to economic uncertainty and the election, how much work do you or does someone as an analyst, how much work do they have to do to make sure that they're setting aside their own personal beliefs when it comes to sussing out what the next what the next occupant of the White House is going to do as far as the economy is concerned.
Yeah, well, history shows that the economy is more powerful and self-determined than any president, that political pressures can create nuances in the economy, but probably not drastically affect its fundamental direction. So think economically, not politically, as we go through the election.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Clearstead Advisors, based in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, splitting a restaurant check minus the awkward moments.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
When dining with a group, unless there's a big spender picking up the tab, you may be splitting the bill, and that can sometimes pose an etiquette challenge. We welcome in Izzy Karish, President of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And I'm sure in your many years in the restaurant business, you've got some stories about discord between parties when it came to splitting the bill.
Absolutely. This is one area that is very touchy when you go out with a group of people and you haven't pre-planned how that check is going to be paid. So it can become very awkward very quickly.
Now, for a lot of people, I think the default is you just throw two credit cards down there, split it right down the middle, because essentially there's some coordination about what you're ordering. And if you're splitting the bill with somebody, you know them and you have a pretty good relationship with them. And that probably solves 75% of all bill or check splitting problems.
Well, it does. And as you're right, that's about 75% of the times that you go out with a group of people. Where it gets tricky is, you know, we go out and, you know, my wife and I, we have a cocktail, we have a glass of wine, we have dessert, and the couple we're with just had an entree and soft drinks. So all of a sudden, you know, asking that couple to split the bill straight down the middle becomes awkward. So it is hard when, you know, that's the assumption maybe of the person putting down the first credit card and forcing the other person to maybe say, hey, can we split this a different way? So that's where the etiquette comes in, and that's where this gets very tricky.
Now, what are some rules of thumb that you should follow to avoid this kind of imbalance? If you are the type of table where one couple orders the tomahawk steak and the magnum of champagne, and the other couple just orders a salad and a Diet Coke.
Well, you know, if in fact you happen to see that one coming, it would certainly be best to say, hey, we would like separate checks. Right when you get started, letting the server know that right off the bat certainly eases that part of it. But if, you know, you're with somebody and they have the tomahawk and they have that champagne and they put their credit card down without saying anything, assuming that they're going to split that bill, then I think it's, even though it's awkward, that next person has to speak up and say, you know what, I'm going to make sure to take care of my meal and maybe a larger part of the tip or the tip. But that's where it becomes awkward, the assumption where we're just going to split it down the middle no matter what I ordered. So somebody needs to speak up, or you're going to have a very long-term issue with your good friends.
And then what are certain situations where you are obligated, or it's generally believed that you have to pick up the entire tab for the table? I mean, obviously, if you're taking somebody out on a date, it's best for you to pick up the check. But there are some other situations where I think etiquette calls for that as well.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I just had that come up last week where I had I was taking out some clients, and the assumption was they're my clients, so I was going to treat everybody for dinner. And originally there was going to be four of us, but the client, since he was in town, invited his sister and brother-in-law. So all of a sudden, now we have the client, and again, it's me taking everybody out to dinner. And I just had to do what I felt was the right thing, which is, you know, pay for everybody. Though I was a little unhappy that they would have invited additional guests to, let's say, a business dinner the night out. And I had the feeling they may have invited their in-laws just because they knew somebody else was picking up that check.
And then it just seems like in this situation, as is the case in so many situations in life, that communication is key. Just make sure everybody's on the same page. Articulate the rules of the road before you actually walk into the restaurant or make the reservation.
Absolutely. If I feel like we're going to be celebrating a little bit differently than the other couple we're with, we'll just say, hey, let's split the check, but I'll take care of the majority of it. Or very often, that person orders a fair amount and they say, look, I'll pick up the whole check. Maybe you can just get the gratuity. And that way it evens out. Somebody's paying for 3/4 of it and the other person's really, you know, paying the appropriate amount. But as you say, communication is the key. And when we're talking about friends and business associates, these are relationships we want to continue for a long time. So the best thing is to say something up front.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the Restaurant Coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, the website horizoninvestment.com, based in Hammond, Indiana. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And your two stock selections on this Stock Picker Monday both come from the world of financial services.
They do. It's a sector that I kind of like right now. I think the economic setup is fine for financial services companies. The capital markets for those really large money center banks that depend on capital markets, the situation is good. And I think the interest rate environment is favorable as well. So they have a number of things in their favor that I think will continue to propel them. And one of those stocks is Bank of America. Symbol is BAC. The stock trades for about $42 a share. Yeah, I know it's one of those, it's been a bank actually that Warren Buffett has been selling fairly aggressively. And so you might go, well, if Warren Buffett's selling it, why should I buy it? Well, you know, you have different investment objectives perhaps than Warren Buffett. And second, Berkshire still owns a pretty good chunk of the company, so they still like it. I like it because they're coming off a very strong quarter. Their business is holding up in terms of both the consumer and on the commercial end. I think loan demand is there, and the stock is cheap. Furthermore, you can get a dividend yield of about 2.5%. So it's a nice dividend play in a reasonably valued stock in a sector that we like quite a bit. So that's Bank of America. Second stock in the financials is American Express. Trades for about $271 a share. AXP is a symbol. American Express is coming off a decent quarter. They had a beat and a raise on their earnings. Their revenue might have been a tad light. But again, it's positioned in a group that we like quite a bit. Also, American Express has a certain amount of resiliency versus other financials because of its fairly affluent client base. So again, a stock that has pretty good operating momentum, pretty good price momentum, still buy at a reasonable valuation. That's American Express. And our company and our clients own both of these, Rob.
Now, both of these institutions, Bank of America and American Express, obviously a credit card company first and foremost, but Bank of America no doubt underwrites credit cards for its customers. But how does, you know, B of A as a consumer-facing, you know, lending and a bank that you can put your money, how does that differ from American Express and how does that play into your investing strategy?
Well, I mean, they're both within the financial services sector, but they are different, as you kind of imply. I mean, Bank of America has, consumer banking. It's got commercial banking. It's got a large position in the capital markets. I mean, after all, Bank of America has a division that used to be called Merrill Lynch. So they're big on equity markets. So that'll differ a little bit from an American Express, which, as you said, depends, you know, on transaction volume from their clients on their, you know, their charge in their credit card basis. So a little bit of different industries, but both benefiting from some of the same macro trends in the economy.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com, based in Hammond, Indiana. His selections on this Stock Picker Monday, Bank of America, BAC, and American Express, AXP.